Welcome to On Tap with Corey and Ira, where they discuss Southern Minnesota breweries and beer. Here's your host, Corey Butler and Ira Carlson.
This is 95.1 The One, AM 1080, KYMN Radio, streaming live on kymnradio.net. This is On Tap with Corey and Ira. I am Corey Butler.
And I'm Ira Carlson.
And as always, we are your number one beer show in the 55057 area code. And occasionally in the 55019.
Yes.
Is that definitely correct, Ira?
Yep.
Done this representation there. So we hope you guys had a good new year, had a good holiday season throughout December. And now as we descend into the long winter months, which I'm okay with, we got fishing, snowmobiling, hockey, and beer to keep us warm. There's lots of good things to talk about.
Yeah, this is definitely a good show to listen to when you're trying to stay warm with the last couple of weeks of wonderful weather we've been having here, you know, including today as you're listening to this on the air. So if you're looking for something to do while you're warming up, stick around for this show. We got a fun one. We had went down as part of our little driving series. We went down and visited Dustin Brow at Brow Brothers down in Marshall. Had a really kind of fun discussion with him in really quite one of the larger tap rooms in the sense of just sheer size, especially for being south of the cities. I think it probably has more square space than almost any tap room up in the cities. But also they put out some pretty good beer, some great food, and a lot of a fun atmosphere there, especially this time of year. If you want to play a little golf, you'll have to hear about that one as well. We also have Andrew with Style of the Week, continuing in kind of those heavy styles that he's been talking about recently. And, of course, a little bit of talk about some of the other beers we've been having recently.
Yeah, as you mentioned, this is show number two of our four-part series, On the Road. Sounds like an investigative series, which we did investigate.
We might have to watch out for On the Road. I think we get in trouble with Jason Davis.
We had a driver. Oh, you're for copyright issues. Yes, you're talking about. I thought you were thinking about drinking and driving.
No, we did
have a driver. But this is our second interview of four that we did on one long November Saturday of the Corey and Ira's Excellent Winter Warmer series, I think, is where we settled up on, or at least that's what I've been promoting it as. So you're going to have to stick with that.
Yeah, somewhere in there. I think we might miss an adventure, but yeah, we won't have it finalized ever.
No, we'll probably still talk about after we finish this series. And as you alluded to, we talked to Dustin over in Marshall. And Marshall, you know, is fortunate that it's a regional hub. So you spoke to the size of what they offer. And fortunately, they have a college there and lots of people, so they can keep them nice and full of good food and good beer. And, you know, there's an interesting story there. You mentioned the golf, and those guys, three brothers, grew out of Lucan, a very small town east of Marshall, and moved to Marshall eventually and have a big space. So stick around and hear that great conversation with Dustin. Appreciate his time. He was feeling a little under the weather that day, but still made time for us and got to try a lot of their fun beer, what they're doing there. And it's a very interesting space. They got a lot going on. But when you're a regional hub, you kind of want to keep everyone happy, offering different things. Speaking of keeping people happy, I was up in Duluth recently and was fortunate enough to stop at Lake Superior, and they're Lake Superior Brewing, I should mention, because Lake Superior is a big lake that people are aware of that are in Duluth. But Lake Superior Brewing, they're nice enough to send us back some beer. I did bring you some.
Yes.
And I did bring that Summit I told you I would bring you. So that Summit Imperial Russian Stout is here today. So you'll have to enjoy that and let me know what you think. But Lake Superior Brewing, they've been around since mid-90s and have made good, consistent beer for the last 20-plus years, looking at 25 years here in a couple of years. What's interesting about them, and like we talked with Damo when he was here from Summit, we talked about Jace from Shells, is these, I don't want to say legacy brands, but brands have been around more than 5 years, which in this very young, growing industry, I don't want to say they're forgotten, but people are always chasing the next big thing or the next shiny thing, even if it's not big. People just, today's palates are just chasing something new and different. And there's breweries that have been doing good beer for a long time that maybe are a little bit of an afterthought. So I'm glad they were able to set us up with some beer we can talk a little bit about today, because obviously they fall out of the Southern Minnesota range. But they sent us back with Kayak Kolsch, which is a great beer. Sir Duluth Oatmeal Stout, which is one of my favorite oatmeal stouts. I put it right there with Summit. It's probably the two best in the state, I'd say. And then their Deepwater Black IPA, which is a nice dark ale. Like Damo said with Summit, like, do beer well, do it consistently well, and people will support you. And there's a reason why Lake Superior has been around for 25 years. So, and they did go through a recent ownership change. So I'm assuming some new things may be coming their way, but we were looking at their website beforehand, because I told you, I mean, I think they only do six or eight beers that I can think of offhand. Their website confirm that. They still do 8 beers. They've done a couple different beers along the way, but again, know what you do well and stick with it. So it'll be interesting to see if they up their game at all next year or two, or maybe. I know they've been doing a lot more promotions and publicity to kind of get a little more attention, because Duluth is kind of the second mecca of beer in the state.
Yeah, I'd love to. I haven't had a chance to get up there yet. I've had a good majority of the ones up there, but I have yet to get there. But yeah, I've had this many times over the years and stuff. But like you're saying, I was nice enough to crack open the oatmeal stout here, and we're enjoying that now. And the Kolsch, I didn't say the black IPA, though. That one, I took care of that one rather quickly. But yeah, no, these are really great beers. Like you talked about their tradition, it reminds me a little bit of Shell's, where, like you say, they're just always been there. It's consistent. So you almost forget about them being there, because everyone always talks about what's opening new. But yeah, this oatmeal stout is just a solid beer. It's really warm, roasty, not too sweet, just going down really smoothly.
Yeah. So if you're up in the Duluth area, give them a shout. They have taproom hours Thursday through Sunday, but they also have statewide distribution. So you can pick up their bottles just about anywhere, including here, I think, in town at Firehouse, where I picked up a couple 6-packs a time or two. And I alluded to conversations with Jace from Shells, who was actually on our show last week, Damo with Summit Brewing Company out of St. Paul a few weeks back, maybe a few months back at this point. If you want to hear those conversations or other conversations we've had with brewers and owners, you can find that on the web at ontapnorthfield.com. We have our full archives on there. You can also find us on podcasts like iTunes and Stitcher and Player FM. If you're listening to this live on 95.1 like you do every other week, find us online. Sometimes we have additional segments. Last week, we had an additional segment with Jace from Shells and the Starkeller. So sometimes there's online-only content that's worth checking out. Social, we're also on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, Facebook and Twitter at OnTap Norfield, OnTap with Corey and Ira at Instagram. You can find photos and places we're checking out and occasional videos we do with folks. So not to miss there. There's plenty going on there. As Ira said, we've got a great show. Stick around.
And now time for Beers of the Week, brought to us today by Firehouse Liquor of Dundas. Our first offering, for at least for us here in Minnesota, is kind of a semi-oldie but a goodie, in the sense that Indeed has been around for a little while and has been putting out some good beers for a while. And our first offering is their Let It Roll IPA. And this is a really fun, juicy, hoppy, big-flavored IPA. If you like big-flavored beers today, both of our offerings are great. But this one, really full-flavored, really tasty, kind of fun, and that only comes in at about a 6.2%, which in the way of IPAs nowadays is a mid to low range.
You can handle it.
Yeah, but it's definitely a full flavor, but not in the way that like it's too tart or too acidic or anything else. This is just a really fun beer. I'm definitely enjoying this one. This is one of those beers that there's so many good IPAs out there, and the market is just so flooded with them that I sometimes forget about this one because there's so many others that you taste and everything else. So I was really glad Sean sent this one over, because once you have it, you go, oh yeah, this is a good beer. This is a fun one. So
yeah, it's easy to lose track of IPAs because there's so many in the market now. But this is a good one people should keep track of. It's the seasonal offering from Indeed, a Minneapolis-based brewery, and it rotates with their Let It Ride IPA, which is kind of their spring, summer, fall offering. This is their fall, winter, spring offering, somewhere around there. I think they're both out for about 6 months. And this is good. Like you said, it's hop aggressive for sure at 6%. IBUs are up there at 86, but it's a nice floral punch. You know, there's a lot of different flavors that people could have IPAs. Some people think just bitterness. That's not necessarily the case, obviously. But there's a lot of flavors that come within the IPA spectrum. And this is nice and floral if you like those type of IPAs, you know, versus like a piney or a resiny kind of IPA. So it's a great offering. Cool graphics on there from Chuck D. He does all their stuff for Indeed. And it's fun when you can enjoy the beer. It's more fun when you can enjoy the can or the bottle as well. And speaking of enjoying another beer, we've got the Great Lakes Brewing Company. They're out of Cleveland, Ohio. And we've got their Blackout Stout Imperial Stout. You know, nothing to take away from Indeed. But Great Lakes has a nice little graphic on here. But it's not so much a graphic that caught my attention. It's a little story next to it. I'm a story guy. I love reading about these things. So the background on this beer is, it's bold and dark as a powerless metropolis. Our Russian Imperial Stout commemorates the infamous 2003 blackout that briefly left some 55 million people utterly unplugged. So there you go. Here's their Russian Imperial Stout, Comes in a bottle just shy of 10% alcohol, 50 IBU, so not overly aggressive on the hops, which you need to do to contend with the big malt bill, which the yeast eats and turns into alcohol. And when you have a 10% alcohol beer, you have a lot of malt in there. So usually hops need to balance that out. This is a little sweet, not too bad. I mean, that's typical for the style. But what I notice 5-10 seconds after a sip and have that initial flavor, that initial sweetness come through, you get a little bit of a burn in your throat, which I, for one, enjoy. It's not going to be everybody's cup of tea, but I like these kind of hot beers, as they call them, that kind of warm you up in the middle of winter when it's, you know, minus 10 outside, and maybe you're sitting on a slab of ice or maybe in your basement by a fire. Either way, a little heat in your mouth is good.
Yeah, this is a really a fun beer. Like I said earlier, the beers of the week this week are just full of flavor, and this one is definitely packing a punch, both from just full mouth feel, just big flavor. Like you said, a little bit on the sweet side there, but it's a good sweet in this case. Kind of really balances out with the stout, and yes, that heat part at the back end of it. And going off that story you were talking about earlier, this is one that, you know, if the power went out, this would probably be an enjoyable one to sit in the dark and enjoy a little bit of, because this is a good full-flavored beer. I've had other of the Great Lakes beers, whether it be their Edmund Fitzgerald or some of their other lines and stuff. This is my first time having the Blackout Stout, though, and this one is just a really good offering.
And if you want to be responsible, this is what we would call a sipper beer. So you sit down, we talked about that a show or two ago about the big Black Friday beers. I mean, you'd sit down and enjoy it for maybe an hour. I mean, you definitely can drink it in 20 minutes, but you're probably not going to have more than one. But you could sit for a couple hours and just sip it slowly. It's a nice beer.
And if you want to try either one of these great flavored beers that we have today or any of the other beers we've talked about in the previous shows, they're all conveniently located south on Highway 3 at Firehouse Liquor in Dundas.
Look for the fire truck. We're coming here live, or at least we're recording live from Marshall, Minnesota with Brow Brothers Brewing. We got Dustin Brow, a man of many hats here. How's it going, Dustin?
Good, good.
Appreciate you having us in town.
Thanks for coming out.
Short 3-hour drive from Norfield. So
I've made it many times.
Yes, as I was joking, we do it for the people, and that's why we're out here. But as people know, this is our second in a series of shows we're doing for the winter. Last show, we talked about what we're going to name it. We won't show it here because we're still debating the day we're recording this in November. So we've got a couple names floating around. I want to do Winter Warmer series, but Ira's got some other ideas.
I'm a little more on the Corey and Ira's Excellent Adventure, you know, showing my 80s heritage there.
But. So to be debated on the ride home after a few more beers. And we do have a driver, just for the record. So Dustin, tell us about where people can find you in Marshall. We were just talking about the identification of the big intersection, one of the most well-known ones in the area.
Corner of 59 and 23. So look for the silo. The arrow will point you toward the tap room. It's actually pretty easy to find.
Yeah, we were looking down. I was doing trivia and Ira was driving, and we looked up like, hey, there it is. Just kind of stuck out at you, coming from the east, at least.
In the Perkins parking lot. That's what we tell people.
There you go. Well, I think you're a little bit bigger than Perkins, but...
Yeah, there's a few more cars parked out here in front of here than Perkins right now. So
yeah, we serve beer.
Yeah, both in physical space and in our hearts.
Yeah,
a little bit bigger. So you're in Marshall. That's a good stretch from the cities, but I'm sure people make down the trip. This isn't where you started, though. You started in Lucan, and
that's right.
From a little research I did, just a little bit, you guys started brewing about 1999, but didn't become an official business till 2006. Is that correct?
That is correct. We started out as a tap room in '99, little 2-barrel system. And then just slowly grew with the industry from there. You know, added on distribution in 2006. We moved actually out to the building that was on the edge of town in Lucan and just kind of grew from there.
Well, what was the genesis back in '99 to start brewing and open the little tap room in Lucan?
So my wife and I are hotel restaurant grads from SMSU out here. Go Mustangs. And we moved to
cars or the horse.
The horses.
Yeah, cars might have a liability issue.
Yeah. Sorry. We actually put in a little brewery in a restaurant just to get people to drive to Lucan. I mean, that was going to be our niche, and it was in the early days of craft beer, obviously, and relatively early days, and we just wanted to pull beer drinkers out of the woodwork.
Did you always have an interest in brewing, or is this something you thought you'd try and kind of learn along the way?
You know, in college, my dad bought me a winemaking kit, and I bought him a brewer's kit for Christmas or something like that. And then we decided that we liked the opposite ideas. And so we just started doing a little bit of home brewing. Had to make, this is before really the interweb sold a lot of home brewing kits and whatnot, ingredients. And so we'd have to drive up to the cities or down to Sioux Falls to find some grain to make beer with. And so it just kind of slowly grew out of there.
Yeah, I was going to say, you alluded to the early budding craft scene. Back in 99, there wasn't much going on. It was still largely macro and imports.
Especially out here in Marshall.
Especially out here in Marshall, yep. So you took a dive in that, and we have to applaud the effort to do that. And you grew along with that. As the industry changed, you've also grown with that. I mean, what are some of the changes you've seen in those initial 7 years, but then also the 11 years that followed it?
Well, little things like growlers. You know, growlers weren't a thing back then. You know, Sunday beer sales. Just most of it is just the beer drinkers, the customers, you know, the acceptance of craft beer. Begging retailers to put a six-pack on their shelves. Not having a craft beer section in a liquor store. Mm-hmm. You know, that was... And now when a new liquor store opens up, they add how many doors of craft beer. Back then, it wasn't that way. And getting a really valued floor stack or some space in a liquor store, and then going there every day to see if anybody pulled one of your six-packs, you know, it was just so different back then. And keep in mind, it wasn't that long ago. You know, 1999, sure. 2000, 98. That, it's not like it was ages. A century ago. Yeah. But just look at how different the beer market is today. It's unbelievable.
Well, that had to be really hard to even, I know at least at a larger scale of production, you know, that had to be hard to get into or have a financial commitment to pay that huger licensing cost to get distribution.
You know, back then, getting distribution, we actually self-distributed our first year or two. And part of the reason was that we could help build our own brand, and it was us walking in a retailer's door, which really helps. You can tell your own story. But part of it is, distributors were still pretty skeptical about craft beer, and there was no guarantee that this was going to grow back then. You know, it might have just kind of lagged along for 10, 15 years, who knew? So it really took us getting some spots, seeing some sales, you know, getting the attention of distributors, and then, of course, it just kind of blew up after that, and distribution has gotten a lot easier in some ways for craft beer. But in the early days, it was pretty tough, and you really had to prove yourself before, build your own brand before anybody's willing to take you on.
And you still see that now, but the doors are open a little bit now, and that's because of the people like you who've made the effort to change the scene.
Yeah, and the reasons are different. So now, going into a new distributor... they want to see, and rightfully so, they want to see your brand being built, not from a customer or store pull-through standpoint, but just from can your brand stay? Can you compete? You know, the idea of craft beer is set in stone, at least for now, but it's just a matter of
you're setting yourself apart.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But just because there's so many breweries now.
Hopefully by brand, but hopefully more so by product, right?
Yeah, quality. Yeah. We forget about that.
So this started off originally, you said, with you and your wife, with the restaurant angle, but the name of the company is Brow Brothers. I assume there's a few other people involved, at least one, right?
Yeah, in 2006, we moved into kind of a shabby steel building on the edge of town in Lucan, and then we brought on my brothers, and eventually my dad as well, who was always kind of there in the background helping regardless. And that's kind of, everybody has their own skill set. You know, Brady and Trevor are my brothers. I'm the middle brother. Everybody's kind of brings some sort of skill to the table. So
18 years ago when this venture kind of started in earnest a little bit, did you ever imagine it turning out to what it is now? I mean, with two moves, with the expansion, obviously you have distribution throughout the state, or at least in the cities. I'm assuming further than that, but I live in the city, so I don't get farther than that. Yeah. But your footprint's huge,
yep.
And you put out a lot of quality beer. I mean, was this ever an idea way back then, or was it just a find a way to get people in the restaurant?
No, it was absolutely just a way to get people in the restaurant. And it really became a tail wagging the dog situation. So what would happen is we'd go up to a beer festival, and keep in mind, there weren't very many breweries back then. And people would say, I love your beer. Where can I get it? Well, you have to come down to Lucan to have it. And so it didn't take long for us to go, hey, maybe we can sell some beer not in Lucan. And so it really, when you look at how the industry's grown over the last 20 years, we're basically there along for the ride with it.
and you've rode it along all this time, and now you've got all these new people coming up. I mean, have you guys become kind of the, I don't want to say the forefathers of Minnesota brewing, but you guys are definitely in the game a lot longer than 95% of the people currently in it. Do people lean on you quite a bit and give you calls or shoot you emails and say, hey, I'm looking to start a brewery, or I have started a brewery, we've had this challenge with this equipment or anything like that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I, for the most part, I don't hesitate because we did the exact same thing back in the day. You know, back when we started, I don't know what there was, 8 or 9 breweries in the state, something like that. So
it was a small number.
It was a small number. And so we'd get together for a Brewers Guild meeting, and we would yell at each other for about 10 minutes. And then we'd really not get anything done except for drink beer. And we were just so excited to drink somebody else's beer, especially coming from Southwest Minnesota. And then we'd like play pull tabs or something, or just go to the bar and drink. And so I'll go to a Brewers Guild meeting now. I won't know half the people at more than half the people in there.
Yeah.
And yeah, I sit at the old guy table. And it's just so interesting. But you know, it really does recharge the batteries a little bit, because then you look at somebody who's just starting for the first time, the energy and, you know, the commitment and the idea that they're taking a chance. And it really, you look back and you go, God, was I exactly like, I imagine I was exactly like that, but it's really fun to see. We're in a fortunate situation right here, being in Southwest Minnesota, that we're actually really close to the South Dakota Brewers as well, and the North Dakota Brewers.
Mm-hmm.
So we keep in touch with those guys as well, the guys down in Sioux Falls, out in Brookings. Okay. And so we're kind of straddling the line. And in some ways, we're a little bit, geographically, definitely, we're closer to the guys out west.
It grows your network and grows your reach, I'm assuming, for consumers as well. I'm assuming you guys distribute across state lines, right?
Yep.
Sioux Falls is probably, or Sioux Falls. I always get Sioux Falls and Sioux City backwards.
Well, don't tell them that.
Well, my wife went to school in one of them, or near one of them. I don't know. Iowa, North, South Dakota. It's all the same for us. No, I'm just joking. This will never make air.
I have a lot of family ties to Sioux City, so it's definitely, I know where the location is on that one. But Sioux Falls is more of a, as you're passing the head out to the Black Hills and everything else. But so, yeah, I was going to ask that same exact question earlier. I mean, is Sioux Falls actually a bigger market for you than the Twin Cities, or how does that kind of compare? Where do you like to market to, or what is your better market?
It's not the Twin Cities, just for sheer number of people is you can take those percentages. And I always say this, there's the same percentage of craft beer drinkers, you know, in every market. It's just that you look at the Twin Cities, you just have the numbers. So, and Sioux Falls is a great market for us, and we love going down there. Same thing with Omaha. Omaha's turned into a great beer city. And I think Iowa slowly, like the Des Moines area and whatnot, slowly getting up to par. But we've had great success west of here, as opposed to just thinking that everything goes up to the Twin Cities. Twin Cities is huge for us. Don't get me wrong.
Sure.
There was a time not too long ago when over half of what we were producing was just going up to the cities. But it's been nice. We've been able to diversify. And as craft beer, you think of it as a wave, and it's really been this way. You start in the Twin Cities, and you can even get more specific and say, like, St. Paul or, you know, kind of the southern part of the Twin Cities. It wasn't that long ago. I remember the northwest suburbs were, you know, craft beer hell. You couldn't find craft beer up there.
Yeah.
Now, of course, it's starting to spread out in those southwest suburbs and whatnot. And so you look at it as a wave just kind of moving slowly out, and then maybe from Sioux Falls as well, kind of slowly moving out. And it's fun to track those. You know, back in the old days, you could literally track brands. Like an IPA would just work its way slowly out from the Twin Cities, and then boom, it would hit Marshall or, you know, just do that. So it's kind of fun to look at that. Now with the interweb and beer blogs and whatnot, the information's just out there. So people are asking their liquor stores for different beers, and they make it a lot faster out to those markets.
Well, it's got
to
be helped too, because then you get those advocates, and they may have not even had your beer yet, but they want to try it, because that's kind of what today's world's all about, is just experiencing something new.
Absolutely. And a beer drinker going into a liquor store or a bar and asking for Braw Brothers is so much more valuable than me going in there trying to sell my product to that bartender or that operator.
Sure.
Because it's true customer demand. And that's why I love the craft beer scene. It's because it's literally what people are asking for. That's what we're brewing, and that's what, you know, retailers are putting on the store shelves, and that's what bar owners are putting on tap. And so it's just it's such a cool situation, because beer drinkers really do own their beer, their selection and whatnot.
They're a vocal bunch, for better or worse.
Yeah.
Mostly for better.
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
But speaking of beer,
Yeah.
We got a little flight going on here. There's some really pretty interesting beers on here already. There's one that I'm very intrigued by. But anyways, tell us a little bit about what you brought out here for us.
Okay, I brought a little bit of everything. In the tap room, we have 22 taps and two beer engines. And so we use our tap room as a lab, and it a lot of times will help dictate what eventually will end up in a bottle. So
good way to use it.
Yeah, no, yeah. It's a good tool for us, actually. I've got a little bit of everything, and so we do a kettle sour, because in our tap room, obviously, we can't serve ciders, and we can't serve wine, and we can't serve things like that, and so we do a kettle sour that we will flavor to whatever you like. Kind of like a Berliner Weiss, not quite as old school, a little bit more modern take on it. But for those cider drinkers and those non-traditional craft beer drinkers, it goes over really, really well.
It's very clean. This is mango, right?
Yep. So we spice this one with a little bit of mango, but we can do raspberry, we can do passion fruit, and we literally do it pint by pint. So it pours out as a straight kettle sour out of the tap.
So how do you spice? Is like a syrup you put in
yep,
there?
Yep, okay. Exactly. Yep.
It's great.
Kind of like, it's not Woodruff, but kind of along those same lines as a Woodruff syrup.
I like.
So,
like your tropical fruits.
I'm a tropical fruit guy, so you hit the nail on the head there.
Here's what would happen in our tap room is people would come in, and let's say it's a couple, and one of them would say, you know, my husband or my wife loves your food, but isn't crazy about craft beer. Mm-hmm. And so we're kind of trying to brew something that goes over a couple different lines.
Sure. Thresher looks like the next one on the line. Thresher. You got a whole pint of that, so you must like that one.
That's my go-to beer. Yeah. It's roughly a 5% old-school Bohemian Pilsner. Sots hops. We do Sterling as the bittering and Sots all the way through. It's clean. It's classic. It's become one of our best sellers here in the tap room because so many people have gone from Old 56, which is our light beer, and want a little bit more. And so think cleaner versions of, kind of like a Beck's, but like a cleaner version of Pilsner or Kelt type of beer.
It's crisp.
Little drier.
Yeah.
But that's my go-to. At 5%, I can have more than one and
stay out of trouble.
Yeah. But after six more, I'll be way more entertaining, though.
Well, and as we've been discussing...
I wish our show was that long. But
on our trip over here, we were discussing just kind of the change in philosophy that you have to get the farther you get away from a large metro area, where in a tight metro area, you can really roll out some bigger beers. But out
triple
here,
IPA.
You know, yeah. Obviously in distribution, you're supported while going out that way, but you still need to support your local people. Is this and, like, 56 kind of your way of... you know, offering the local beer that for other people that may not quite be ready to make that big jump forward?
Yes and no. So sometimes I underestimate what Marshall will take as far as beers, or Southwest Minnesota. Yep. We've done some barrel-aged beers, we've done some sours, and people love them. And we move through them, we burn through them really quickly. And so sometimes I think we underestimate what we could be putting out, especially here in the tap room.
Well, I think palates have changed dramatically even in the last 5 years.
Absolutely. And even if palates change, the trend might be, and I'll use myself as an example. If I come up to the Twin Cities and I know I'm driving home, I don't look at the names and the beer styles right away. I first look at the alcohol by volume up on the sign because I know I'm going to drink probably two beers, maybe three, depending on what the alcohol content is. And so I'm looking for flavor but lower alcohol content. And so maybe Thresher's a little bit more like that. You know, if you're here by yourself, you don't have a driver home, you know you can't sit and pound beers all day or you know, drink a bunch of 13% beers. That's where Thresher really comes in handy for us. It's got flavor, but yet it's manageable. And you know, we're always told this trend, okay, sessionable beers. Now it's sessionable beers. Maybe that's true, but at least we want to have some offerings for that.
Well, and I think a good segment of the beer population is coming back down to earth and what they're chasing. People who have been in, especially those who have been in it for 10, 15, 20 years. It's not just about the double dry hop, triple IPA, or the biggest imperial stout you can find.
Yep.
It's about a well-made beer, and if it's a lager, it's a lager. If it's an Oktoberfest, it's an Oktoberfest, whatever it may be, as long as it's well-made and it's good.
Yeah, absolutely. And in the old days, you know, going for that IPA or that double IPA, part of it was the hunt. Because you couldn't find it everywhere. Yeah. And so you were like, okay, this bar has this beer, and this is I like to drink that, and I can find this double IPA there. Now, it's not that hard to find a good double A IPA. And I can name 20 breweries just without thinking too hard that make great hoppy beers. And so part of it is just that the offerings to volume has changed and you know.
Well, there's not a pent-up demand for it anymore.
No,
it's
you can.
As simple as that.
A trip to any decently stocked liquor store and you can find some great beers.
Well, and I think any style of beer. I mean, you'd be hard pressed to find a beer that says, "Oh, you have to go here to find that." Now, you know, our previous week's show, we end up going down to Starkeller. Mm-hmm. It's fun to see people now actually specializing in that case, really in a a sour. It's,
right.
I agree with you completely that beer styles are out there everywhere now, and you don't have to look very far to find it.
No, and like I said, it's kind of the hunt. So to go to New Ulm and drink those beers, especially coming right out of those vats and those vessels that they have right there, that's a neat experience. And we talk about how, you know, especially younger people are experience-minded. That's a great concept because it is truly a unique experience. You know, what's funny is if you look at in our tap room, I would say our two best sellers are Hoppiest Beer and Old 56. And so think about just the different mindsets when you come into a place.
It's a spectrum.
Yeah, it's fascinating what people's preferences are, but it basically proves kind of the theory about beer drinkers that we've thought for so long.
If it's good, it's good.
Yeah, absolutely.
Speaking of good, what's this next one? We got a Buzzgitter. Go ahead and take a sip. We'll take a pause.
Okay, so Buzzgitter, a unique story about this one. We had a group of crazy guys. We every year we do a United Way beer dinner here in the back, and we pack about 150 people back there, and we do five or six courses, but they do a live auction. Well, one of the live auction items was name a beer. And so a group, a sportsman's association called the Dick Brothers, got together, and they bid on this to name a beer. And we were looking for a beer that kind of was very drinkable. They wanted something that they actually liked, not something crazy and not something too, because it's a big group. And so we had a Kolsch coming out. We've been trying to make a Kolsch for a while. The only thing with this Kolsch is it's gluten-free, gluten removed. So it's under 9 parts per million gluten. And we found out over the last 2-3 years that we almost have to have a gluten-free beer on tap. And so it's clean, it's dry, a little bit of SO2 coming through, but not a whole lot. We've brewed a few different versions of it, weren't really happy with it, and this is the first time we've actually made it where we are happy enough to throw it on tap. So,
I'm getting a little bit of a bite on the back end. Is that just a hop character coming through on that?
It's a low, it's not heavily hopped. However, we did throw in a little bit of aromatic and crystal malt just to kind of soften it up a little bit, but it's kind of, I always think of it as Thresher without the hops, because it's going to, like I said, it's going to get that sulfur dioxide. Yeast does throw a little bit of diacetyl, which has to be cleaned up through the process, but.
Yeah, it's very clean. It's just something in the throat caught me, a little bitter.
It's,
I mean, good.
Not a bad thing. With that particular beer, and of course, I've got a cold, so my palate is just shot.
Yeah. Ours are always shot, so maybe this is bad feedback.
No, but I almost think it's almost a slight bit of tannic from the grain husk that comes through as
hot. Well, I liked
it. Bitterness.
That's why I was asking about it, because I liked it. I thought it was a good part of it. Well, let's take a break from the other two beers. We'll come back to those. I want to move on to a couple other things. But in the brewing respect, you've been doing this for 18 years now. Clearly, you went from a very small kid to what behind me, I'm guessing, is a very large brewery. How big is your brew house? And tell me a little bit about how your techniques have been refined, just how the process changed in the time, because you've moved to two different facilities. I'm assuming equipment's changed a lot in that time. Tell me about your life the last 18 years.
You know, we still run kind of an old school 15-barrel JV Northwestern system. Two-vessel brew house that we've kind of added an extra vessel or two. But back in the day when we purchased that system was kind of when things were starting to get a little bit crazy, but there wasn't a market for building them. So there are really only two producers domestically for brewing systems. And so we found it out on the East Coast and brought it back. We run a 15-barrel system. We try and turn it 2 to 3 times a day. So we run basically 30-barrel fermenters. We have 8 of those plus 6 more 15-barrel fermenters.
That's how you get all that beer to Minneapolis, right? all those fermenters.
Exactly. Yeah. So we're kind of like I said, we're kind of a little more old school in that we're turning a smaller system often. So the basics haven't changed at all. Still, you're still doing the same thing. For us, it's little differences. The types of pumps we use, the types of hoses we use, the types of systems we use. Maybe we learn how to filter better or something like that. But in terms of the basic process, I got to be honest with you. Ingredients, obviously, with new hops and new malts, but it hasn't really changed that much. And, you know, sometimes when we see something new and we think it's going to be this big new thing, then we look back on it and go, you know, our beer was actually better when we did it this way. Mm. And so we're oftentimes looking back at old recipes going, all right, did we change anything through the years? What's, you know, sometimes you got to bring yourself back to square one in terms of recipe formulation and whatnot and just start asking yourself some tough questions with flavor profile.
Yeah, you just touched on beer recipes. Mm-hmm. You've got a good number of beers out in the market. You talked about this being kind of a testing ground here in the tap room. Tell me a little bit about the beers that you've made over the years and just your philosophy of beer. I mean, obviously here you get to test the sour and you get to test maybe a big stout or a barrel-aged beer, like you mentioned, your Three Trees IPA.
Yep.
You've got a good cross-section of beer. I mean, where does that come from? Is that just feeding your own curiosity and drinking what you like to drink, or are you just testing markets? Or tell me about your lineup.
Every brewer says they brew what they want to drink, mm-hmm. and to some extent that's true. But with as competitive as the market's gotten, we're looking at consumer preferences.
It's a business.
Yeah. Well, you know darn well the big breweries are. So if we don't, we're going to fall behind. So I brew beers that I drink almost every day. Thresher's one of them. I love that beer. It's my go-to. It's my after-work beer type of situation. And that is truly a beer that we brewed because I wanted to have that for myself. And then we brew some beers that I drink once in a while that I love the beer, but I'm a situational beer drinker. When it's hot, I'll drink a lighter beer. When it's cold out in the winter here, I'm going to start drinking some Bon Craigie and some more Moo Juice and things like that. So I'm a true situational beer
Sheep's
drinker.
Sheep's heads out.
Sheep head, absolutely. if I'm playing sheep head, I have to drink sheep head. So
I still need to learn that.
It only takes 5 years to learn that game.
Well, the old guys at the VFW told me that in a couple of years they'll teach me.
Well, yeah, you guys are close to Wisconsin. Everybody out there knows how to play sheep
head. I've asked a lot of old timers. They're not aware of the game, so
they're just
I feel like it's mythical.
Well, you got to find somebody German, and you got to...
That's my problem.
And they have to be ornery, and you have to be mad at life to play sheephead.
There's a lot of Norwegians.
That's how you'll be the best at.
See, that's our problem. We have a lot of happy Norwegians back our way. So. I'm sorry, I cut you off. So no, all these winter beers coming out.
No, so I'm truly a situational beer drinker, but when it comes to like recipe formulation or coming out with a new style, a lot of times we'll just brew a beer because we have a tank empty and somebody gets an itch to try something. We'll try it, drink it. Yeah, it's okay. We like it. And sometimes it's, holy crap, this is good. We really should do something with this. And we do that more and more. In the old days, we might have been brewing, especially early on, we might have been brewing beers to fill spots. So a brewery opens up, right? So what do you brew? You brew something close to a light beer. You brew some sort of pale ale. You brew some sort of IPA. In the old days, it wasn't like that. But nowadays, you brew mm-hmm. some sort of IPA. You brew some sort of dark beer.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe it's a stout. Maybe it's a porter, whatever. But you're filling holes in your lineup. I'm glad to say we're 18 years beyond that, so now we can just brew kind of what we want. And we've got our staple beers. We've got
Thresher,
yeah. We've got Bon Craigie, we've got Moo Juice, and we've got Sheephead. And so now I can honestly say that we're more designing beers because either they're a happy accident and we just love them, or because we're going out there trying to make something that we really want to try that we've never done before, especially with the barrel room and whatnot.
Well, I was going to say, using your tap room as an experiment, it's also a fun tap room to step into, because one of the things you haven't talked about is the your whole tap wall is literally a fire truck.
Yeah, my question was going to be, tell us about the fire truck.
So that's our mascot. So Old 56 the beer was named after Old 56 the fire truck. So that is a 1956 pumper built down in Bedelia, Minnesota. And it was on the Lucan fire roll roster for over 50 years. And we originally bought it to be a parade piece. We were going to just drive it to parades. And then we thought, oh, we got to fix the brakes. We got to insure it. We have to take care of it and trust somebody to drive it. let's just park it in the tap room.
It's tough to find a driver when you're a brewery, right?
Yeah, especially with that shifting pattern on there. They don't teach kids how to drive that very much anymore. So we bought it, and I fought. I was on the fire department. Lou Can, my dad, my grandpa, my brothers. So I fought fires. I've driven that to fires, and so we cleaned it up, repainted it, parked it in the middle of the tap room, and we run beers, some from the tanks, the copper tanks out there, and some from a beer cooler underground up into the back end of that fire truck, and then all of our taps are on the fire truck. It's a great centerpiece. And we forget that we're walking. I always tell people, we forget that we're walking around a fire truck every day. But then you'll see like a little kid walk into the tap room, and then it just blows their mind. Like there's a big fire truck right in the middle of the tap room. So you guys have to remind yourself, that's right, there is a fire truck right in the middle of our tap room.
Well, you kind of refurbish it. I mean, it looks beautiful. Obviously, you weren't going to bring it in from its last fire, just plant it in the middle of the tap room.
But. And actually, it was one of the first things we did when we looked at this building is we had to get that fire truck ready because there's no way to get it in and out. So it had to be restored, parked in the corner, and then we built out around it. So it's staying with the building.
Commitment there. Big time. Well, in addition to that space, I mean, we didn't know what to expect. I've seen photos of just like any place I've never been to when we rolled up and we walked in. It's like this space is a lot bigger than we anticipated. Obviously, we knew you had a good distribution footprint, but I didn't have any idea that the tap room and the space itself is so big. This is really a community event center. I mean, you said you're kind of in the heart of Southwest Minnesota. Yep. We were talking offline before this about the number of events you hold here. Let's just rattle through some of them and kind of the idea behind that, why you want to be that community space.
We have, so the building's 40,000 square feet. The tap room.
Small.
The tap room itself is about 5,000 square feet. Add some, you know, for the game room, maybe another 1,600 square feet. And actually, we will rope off the brew house and hold events in there if need be. So we've done everything from weddings, groom suppers. We've had funerals back there. We've had corporate events. We have bingo nights. We have Christmas parties. We have three different Bible groups that meet here weekly. We have a homebrew club in town that meets here as well. So I bet we average probably 10 groups a week that will meet here in some form or fashion. So the space just gets used for so many different things.
Yeah, I'm looking right behind you. I see one of those indoor golfing event things. I don't know what they're called, but you come practice your swing when it's a little cold outside, right?
Yeah, so it's really weird. In January, it'll be like 30 below, and people will be walking in with shorts and their golf clubs strapped over their shoulders. So we have two full-size golf simulators that it's the coolest thing ever to sit and golf in the middle of winter and drink beer and have a pizza, and we get a lot of groups in here for things like that.
It looks like you sponsor this one hole that keeps replaying too. Has your sign up, so man, technology, Ira, I tell you. You got Brow Brothers right in there on the game.
Yeah, we're clever.
So you said Thresher is your favorite beer. What else do you like around here?
Three Trees, because it's new, and I like hops, and I like hoppy beers as well. We've done a grapefruit pale ale that I got to bring back. That was one of my favorites,
too. That sounds fun.
Yeah, and it's a good everyday drinker as well. And then I don't have White Cap, actually, on tap, but White Cap's another one that I really like.
That's in distribution, right?
Yes, it is.
I feel like I've had that.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. So it's hard to sit. Somebody will ask you, well, what's your favorite beer? What beers do you like? And then you start just rattling them off. Then you just
every one of them.
Yeah.
Well, then are there any favorites, then? No.
Yeah, exactly.
They're all your favorites. Obviously, you play as a centerpiece of this community. I mean, do you get a lot of travelers who are kind of like on a beer run or maybe on their way out to hunt in somewhere? Like, you know, we drove 3 hours here. We're probably, what, 3.5 from the cities, maybe? Maybe an hour and a half from Mankato. Do you get a lot of people coming through?
If I teach you the secret route, but.
Oh, well, we'll talk afterward about that one.
We're pretty fortunate. We do get a lot of day trippers. Especially this is a Saturday afternoon, we'll be kind of steady with strangers out there that are just stopping through, driving through, or making a day trip. But I got to say this, the local community, we thought this would be more of a destination type setup just because of the size of the tap room and food and everything.
Yeah.
But it is, I don't know the exact percentage, but I would say 75% of the people who come in here are regulars. And so we didn't necessarily anticipate that. And so it's been so fun just getting to know people And especially because we have a common interest. Just the fact that they walk through the door means they're going to drink and like craft beer. So you're starting from a good spot. And so we've gotten to know so many people in the local area, Marshall. And I got to say, this town has been just so supportive. This is the first brewery ever in Lyon County, which is really unusual out here, even for some of the smaller towns, because...
Well, even historically, for...
Exactly.
You know, before Prohibition, that, you know, so many places we talked to, you know, had breweries, or they're in the old brewery or whatever else. So, to have a county without that beforehand...
It's really unique, and with so many German settlers, you know, and such a German population, it's kind of rare. But so you never know what you're going to expect when you come into a town that's it's really different, it's really new. But we have just been supported so well, and you know, we see monthly increases of 20% and 30% of the people that are coming in our doors, and so it just has taken a little bit for people to figure out what in the heck a brew pub or a tap room is. You know, what are you doing?
Sure.
Now, serving food.
You must obviously benefit from being a college town, you know, to a certain extent.
Somewhat.
Maybe not from the students, but from the family.
Exactly.
Yeah, so that's what I'm saying.
I was going to think the professors.
Well, no, but I mean, you know.
Well, definitely. No, we know that group of people really well, but it's more from the events and the people that come into town. So, for instance, you know, SMSU is a football game today.
Yep.
Where we have volleyball games all the time. They host. They have really fantastic facilities out there for like volleyball, football, basketball, and whatnot. And so there's always a tournament. Or you know, Marshall just built an ice arena with year-round ice and whatnot. So we're always having hockey tournaments, and you know, people from other towns coming in, and we see quite a few people from that are coming in for those reasons. And as a parent myself, I've gone to those hockey tournaments and I've gone to those volleyball tournaments, and I sit in a gym all day on a Saturday afternoon and I want to reward myself after that. I go find a cool brewery or taproom or something like that. So I totally understand where a lot of the people are coming from.
Well, baseball tournament, town baseball, you know, was held here as a state tournament many years ago. I would have liked to have known about this then, because that would have been the perfect place, instead of heading to, I think it was an Applebee's that we ended up going to after the game, where, you know, the team would have definitely enjoyed coming to a place like this. So, yeah.
Well, hopefully they had you on tap there. Yeah.
and you might, like you were talking about, you might have enough space for large groups in here.
That's the thing.
Barely squeeze them in, right?
Yeah, you just never know. So on a Saturday afternoon like this, 40 people from a hockey team just might walk in the door from Elk River or Waseca or something like that. And it's great, because especially the Twin Cities teams, because it's such a normal thing to go to a tap room that when I travel, the first thing I do is I look and see, all right, how far am I from a brewery? How far am I from a tap room? Where should I stop? And so we do get a lot of that, and it's been terrific.
Well, as we wrap up here, I failed to mention the food side. You brought up a couple times. You guys are a full restaurant here. We've got some burgers waiting for us over there. Can't wait to dive into, because we're getting hungry. I know I am.
Yeah.
You know, that goes back to the original 1999 restaurant deal in Lucan, and you've continued that through. You guys are one of the few production breweries in the state that also have a full restaurant, because you only serve your own beer, so you're allowed to do that.
Yep.
Why was the restaurant side still important to carry on through this current iteration of Brow Brothers?
For a couple of reasons. One, we've done it before, you know, and that's kind of our background. So, you know, we enjoy that part of the business. We enjoy that part of the industry. But two, I think I'm not so sure it would be as easy to keep a tap room as busy without food out here. Mm-hmm. Not because people wouldn't come here and drink a beer, but just the population size. And the other thing is, it makes us more family friendly, and we want to encourage people to bring, you know, their families.
I was about to say that the exact same thing you talked about, the hockey tournament, the hockey family mentality kind of a thing, everyone showing up. You wouldn't have that if you didn't have the food, the game room, all the options for, you know, family to show up and everything else. Yet while the adults actually have something enjoyable to drink other than the standard Mick Golden Light, you know, kind of fare. So
it's absolutely right. What we love to hear is a little kid will say, or a parent will say, you know, I asked my kid where they wanted to go to eat for their birthday or something like that, and they said to the brewery. That's an awesome thing to hear. There were many reasons for it. You know, early on, it also allowed us to be open on Sunday. Because when it first started, you couldn't be open on Sunday as a tap room unless you served food. So we were actually the first tap room that served food in the state of Minnesota.
Oh. Smart business plan.
Well done. It's smart until the fryer goes down on a Saturday night and I'm at home in bed.
But you at least got beer to fall back on. We've got two more beers here in the flight. I want to make sure we touch on those. Last two we have here are the Red Velvet and the Three Trees, which you just mentioned here a few minutes ago. Both very good. Tell us about them.
So Three Trees is the first IPA we've ever put in a bottle and actually produced. And we used to be the brewery that's been around for a long time and never really made an IPA. And not for any particular reason, but we just had tried a bunch of recipes, were lukewarm on them, never really got excited about it.
Sure.
So this one, we really liked. It's Eldorado. And the other thing is, look at how hops have changed now and the flavors that you can get out of hops have changed and the techniques and whatnot. So this one is heavy on the Eldorado. Uses quite a bit of Amarillo in the dry hopping, and then a little bit of Centennial and Cascade in the middle. I can't make any hoppy beer without putting at least a little bit of Centennial and Cascade because those are old school hops. So
just a couple of your C's.
Yeah.
Funny, I've never heard of them.
This new variety that nobody uses anymore.
It's crazy.
So we love Three Trees. It's named after. We've got three little trees planted on the south side of the building. And so, we just released it in bottles a couple weeks ago. It's just basically hitting the market right now.
I hadn't heard of it yet. Yeah. I like it.
No,
I will look for it.
It's a fun beer, and locally at least, it's been received well, and it does really well in the tap room, so we're happy with it.
Cool.
Then the Red Velvet Moo Juice, we actually last year started doing a Moo Juice sampler pack, and so it's four different beers, four different versions of Moo Juice that we'll do throughout the holidays, and so Red Velvet is one of them, and so every night I bake 20 red velvet cakes, and then we grind them up and we throw them in the fermenters. No, we don't do that.
Well, I was going to say, you're spot on. The flavor's great.
So. I know. I'm not normally the sweet beer person, but this is a really fun beer. I really enjoy it a lot.
As a dessert beer, it's fantastic.
Yeah.
And so it's a combination of vanilla and cocoa. And when we're making it, it does smell like a bakery in here, so it's kind of fun. And people out in the tap room will be like, what are you guys cooking back there? It doesn't smell like anything that you on the menu. So
pumpernickel.
We've had a lot of fun with Moo Juice, and that is, you know, Moo Juice still today is basically our flag bearer, and it is roughly 40-50% of what we produce is Moo Juice on a daily basis.
Wow!
So we'll have people walk into the brewery all the time that'll say that, oh, this is the brewery. You guys are the guys that make Moo Juice. So sometimes we struggle with brand recognition just because people have drank Moo Juice for so many years, but don't really realize who brews it.
I may have to. Have one more sample on our way out there because I saw the tiramisu, which looks like another combination of this. But
yeah, that's a good one too. Like I said, a good, and this is more of a British style stout. It's sweeter. Obviously, there's oats in it. By the way, there's lots of milk sugar in there too. So if you're lactose intelerant, be careful.
Skip that one.
Yeah, but so it's really big bodied and it's really easy to play with because the flavors are. The basic flavors of Moo Juice obviously are chocolate, a little bit of coffee and roast, but not crazy, but a little bit of caramel, a little bit of toffee. It actually kind of straddles the line between a really thick porter and stout, but we're simple, so we just say stout. And but those flavors are so kind of, not basic, but they're easy to really play with and add to. So we do a blood orange, we've done a s'mores version, we've done a tiramisu, and throw them on nitro or something like that. It's a good beer. Sometimes I have to remind myself to drink it on a daily basis or on a weekly basis because it's kind of you wouldn't think a stout would be really popular coming from Southwest Minnesota, but it is.
I've picked it up many of times, and I really appreciate what you guys have done with that. And it's interesting you say that. The production level that's so high. It makes sense because it's a very good beer.
Yeah.
But I also see plenty of the other beer that I've enjoyed too. So it doesn't make sense in that sense either. Right. So,
no.
But hey, you got to go ride the pony that
that's
going,
exactly right.
Right.
We would have never guessed it, you know, when we first started brewing it. But look where it is today.
So we're here looking at, we're in the new year now. It's early January. Anything that people should be aware of for upcoming beers? Obviously, Three Trees should be everywhere in the market now, I'm assuming.
Yep.
Any local events or beers that people should be looking for here in the next couple months?
You know, Rubus Black. We're looking at Rubus Black as a midwinter seasonal going forward. That's a great beer. It's one of those recipes that I was talking about before where you just brew it one time and hit on it and go, okay, this is a winner. And so we always kept that one. That we brewed that for many, many years. And then going into spring, we're going to, you know, we're just going to kind of, we talk about this at our production meetings. We're going to take it wherever the market takes us. And so, you know, we'll release Thresher locally here pretty soon. It's not like it was in the old days where you could put a beer on the market and just let it go. People are picky, so you can't just throw anything out there. And so we're going to focus on quality. We're going to focus on technique. We're going to focus on training. And then if we make good beer and if we continue to worry about quality and to be concerned with quality, that is, even our existing beers, we always ask ourselves, how can we make it better? And that's kind of what we're going to focus on in the next year.
When can we expect a chili style from you? No, I'm just joking. It's my running joke. There aren't enough. I want some heat in my beer.
Those beers are so awesome or crappy, aren't they?
It really is, yeah.
So I'll drink one and go, God, this is great. And it'll be like a little tap room that made one batch and we'll never make it again. And then you'll drink one and go, this is horrible. I hate this beer.
Yeah.
I got to dump this. But there are some great stouts there with just the, it's just hitting that right amount of the heat.
Yeah.
That's the key.
Well, where can people point to if they want to keep up on the interweb with you on what is coming up on beer releases, events, if they're down in the area?
Browbeer.com. Our Twitter handle is @browbeer. Otherwise,
MySpace, anything like that?
Yeah. No, I'm joking. We're old enough.
Yeah, there you go.
Otherwise, just pop in.
Are you friends
in
with Tom? No, it's good. They're the creator. It's a MySpace joke. I'm sure Ira will edit it out. Please don't.
Yeah.
The puzzling look on your face.
It's my memory.
Who the hell's Tom?
There's four Toms out in the tap room right now. I'm wondering which one you're talking about.
This is Southwest Minnesota.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. It's going to be a fun year. I mean, it's such a fun, like I said, it's such a fun industry that you literally never know what the next thing is going to be, what the next beer that you didn't anticipate that you're going to love is. So, and we're the same way. Tomorrow we might brew a test batch and just totally fall in love with it, and who knows what's going to happen.
Well, very good. Well, best of luck, and we'll keep an eye out on what's coming up. I'm going to pick up some Three Trees as soon as I see it, and hopefully by now, when this airs, I'll already have 6 or 14 beers. So, thanks, Dustin.
Perfect. Thanks for coming down, fellas.
Hey, it's Andrew Burns, and talking about another dark, strong Belgian Abbey Ale. This time we're talking about a quadruple, otherwise known as a quad. Now, a quad, like its name suggests, is about twice as strong as a double or a double, which we talked about last week, which means it is north of 12% alcohol. And the Belgian monks get it that strong by using a heavy dose of candy sugar. Now, this is sugar that's already been caramelized, and it's used in the candy-making process. And when you add sugar to beer, it really increases the alcohol content. All that sugar is yeast food for that fantastic Belgian yeast, and that Belgian yeast loves to go to town and make it a quite high-alcohol beer. Now, beers this strong tend to be good for aging. And a quad will certainly develop in the bottle. But even so, it's a fantastic beer to drink fresh because you get those Belgian ale yeast characteristics blending with the dark, malty flavors of the base beer.
Well, that's going to put a wrap on this show. Thanks to Dustin from Brow Brothers Brewing and Marshall for giving us a little bit of his time and hosting us at his fun facility and giving us a couple beers. We definitely enjoyed it, so thanks to him. And that was stop number two. We got stop number three coming up in 2 weeks. We'll be airing on January 20th, 11 a.m. here on KYMN Radio 95.1. We will be at Take 16, or will we? As you'll find out on the next show, we had some technical difficulties, so we caught up with those guys down the road and did it over the internet. So, we chatted with Luke and Dave from Take 16, and it turned out well.
Oh, yeah. we had a difficulty on the day of the trip, but we still stopped at Take 16.
We did.
Got a chance to enjoy their facility and everything else, and it was a really fun space. So it was fun to catch back up with them and talk to them a little bit about what they're doing down there.
Yeah, so check in the third of four of our four-part series here. That would be what three of four would be, right? Four-part series of the Corey and Ira's Excellent Winter Warmer Adventure series. Nailed it.
There you go.
Got it. So that's show number three. Show number four will be 2 weeks after that, but you can stick around until next week to check it out. Or you can find it on our Facebook page where we have all our upcoming guests. That is at On Tap Norfield. Just search for us on there and you'll find it. On Tap Norfield's also our handle on Twitter. Instagram, we have On Tap with Corey and Ira. We post photos on all three of those channels. So whatever your preferred method of keeping up with people is, go find us. We put photos, sometimes videos, just updates of what we're doing. And one thing I'll mention that people could have stayed up to date on with our social channels is I went on a little day trip with friend Joe. You weren't able to make it because you're wrapping up one of our previous shows and obviously holidays and such, right?
Yep.
And you missed out. We had a good time. It was a long day as they tend to be when we do these little day trips, but headed over to the South Shore, as we like to call it. Started in Reed's Landing, headed down to Wabasha, where Turning Waters Bed Breakfast and Adventure is creating their own brewery. They're still doing homebrew. They're waiting for a federal license, I believe. So look for them in six more weeks. Reed's Landing was great. Right by the river, we saw eagles left and right. Great facility. We had lunch there. Fun beer. We'll have them on the show here, hopefully in April, I believe. And then Turning Waters, I think we're going to have them on here later in the summer once they get open and rolling. Headed down to Winona. Saw our buddies at Island City. Finally, I hadn't been there before. I know you hadn't enjoyed the space. It's a cool space. Old rail yard, nice brick. Got a little tour of the facility. Had some beer. Got sent home with their vanilla Dunkel Wiesen, or Weissen if you prefer. And boy, am I a sucker for vanilla beers. If it's done well, it's good. And theirs is done well. It's not too sweet. I love the vanilla flavor. And that really came through. So thanks to Colton for sending that home with me. And then checked out Karsbrewing. We've talked about them on the show before. Very small brewing operation in Fountain, Minnesota. Town of like 400 or 600, something like that. It's about 25 minutes, I think, south of Rochester. Only open Friday, Saturday. I think 5 to 10 on Friday, 12 to 10 on Saturday. So if you're going to make it, you better put it on the calendar and make sure you get there when they're open.
I've been to, obviously, Reed's and Island City. I'm hoping to make it to Turning Waters here one of these days. But Kars is one of the ones that I've been trying to figure out a time or a place to get there. And it, you know, we've been down to like state parks in the area. But yeah, you're talking a small window. If you want to hit that place, you got to really be plan your time accordingly to get there. But if you're going to be down there, which you didn't do on your trip, but you'd be remiss to not at least stop over and visit one of our fermentation friends in Four Daughters Winery. We had them on back in quite a few months ago now. Yeah, maybe even earlier than that. Yeah. But yeah, the Kegs and Barrel Festival down in Rochester, had a chance to stop in with them. A lot of you may not know about them. They got the wine. They're mainly a winery, but they have the cider, which a lot of people may not realize is coming from there, which is
loon juice.
There you go.
Yeah.
So yeah, no, it's actually a very popular cider. My daughter, who is 23, it's her favorite cider that she enjoys and stuff. So it was really fun the day that we stopped in there, not realizing that they were did the cidery and stuff, and that they had the loon juice. So an extra one to go in there. You know, I know I'm stepping on your whole tour, but since I didn't get a chance to go, one of the places I wanted to go is Karsten. If you're going to be there and you're close by, stop by Four Daughters. It's well worth the visit.
Absolutely. And I mean, that's really the genesis of the show too, is that there are so many options out there now, whether it be beer or our, as we like to say, fermentation friends. So if they're a winery, a cidery, or a distillery, there's plenty of places to go check out on a Saturday or Sunday. But there's plenty to find. It's just fun to get in the car and go for a drive. I know you and Steph like to do it. My wife and I try to do it, but we've got two young kids, just a nudge under 23. So I don't have the luxury of no kids at home right now, but one day, way down the line, I will have that opportunity.
Well, if you do get a chance, the Four Daughters Winery is probably the best wine tasting I think I've ever had. Instead of being guided one drink at a time down the road, they kind of lay them out in front of you, almost like a flight, in the sense of a wine flight. But they really kind of give you they spend the time to give you the description and the time to enjoy it. But then you can kind of do it at your own pace, where, you know, some other wine tastings that I've been to, you know, you're really kind of on a rigid start right here and you work through these ones. And anyways, I had a really nice time down there, especially because we hadn't even been planning to go there. We were just driving down the road and all of a sudden saw a winery and said, hey, do you want to stop? And we stopped in and ended up having a really nice visit there.
Yeah, and the brief interaction I had with Vicky at the Kegs and Barrels Festival, I picked up that they probably know what they're doing. So it's good to hear that. I hope to get down there one day and hopefully not too far out.
I know, it's a beautiful space there.
But plenty in Rochester area to check out, plenty along the river, starting with Red Wing all the way down to Winona. So get out there, go explore. There's plenty of places online where you can find where these places are. Or just, you know, keep tuning in here. We'll do our best to let you know who's out there and what they're doing. So we will be back in 2 weeks. That's January 20th with our friends at Take 16. That means next week you got Northfield Outdoors here at 11 a.m. on KYMN 95 The One. And we will be back in 335 hours. Cheers.
Cheers.